and I just want to welcome. And there are open chairs. HOD has joined us. We are going to start by introducing ourselves. So there's another two chairs for the Department of Human Settlements. If you can join us here, there are extra two chairs. Okay, I have to choose who can sit there. The first two on the first row, you can sit here. Thank you very much. And please don't wait for me to tell you to come. Thank you very much. Okay, let's get comfortable. Thank you very much. Those who know me, my name is Matodi Maseko, and I'm a standing committee chair for Human Settlements. Thanks for being with us this afternoon as we not interrogate, or should I say we interrogate Member Tisha? Interrogate the budget, or what must I say we are doing? Okay, as we consider the budget for Human Settlements. I'm going to allow the members to introduce themselves for the record purpose and after the department. And Minister Madikizela, thanks for being with us. Can you close the door for us, please? Thank you very much. Over to you, members.
Afternoon, Chair. Afternoon to the party. Afternoon to the minister. Tasha Simmons, a member.
Good afternoon, all. Wendy Philander, member of the committee.
Good afternoon. I'm Regan Allen, an alternate member.
Good afternoon. I'm Sharon Davis. I'm a member of this committee.
Donald Lockett from the Department Management Accounting.
Good afternoon. It's Shanaz Adams from Strategic Support.
Good afternoon, Chairperson members. I'm Jackie Sampson from the Department Chief Director Planning.
Good afternoon, Chairperson members. I'm Tandum Gudi, HOD for Human Settlements.
Good afternoon, Chairperson, honourable members. Francis DeWitt, CFO for the Department.
Good afternoon, Chairperson, honourable members. I'm Rob Smith, Director, Ground Management.
Good afternoon, Chairperson, members. Benjamin Nkosi, Director, Strategic Support.
Good afternoon, Chairperson and everyone. My name is Brian Mabuta, Affordable Housing in the Department.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Pamela Masiko Kambala. I'm a Director for Policy and Research in the Department.
Good afternoon. I'm Erika van Rensburg. I'm responsible for planning.
Good afternoon, Chairperson, members. Nathan Adrianza, Director responsible for communications.
And I'm Ilbo Nkosinathisela, the Minister of Human Settlements.
Thank you very much. I think Mayor Phila Maisela will be joining us. She's still on her way coming from National, and she sent the apology for to that effect. Members, we know that we have received the additional adjustment appropriation bill. So we have two bills that we are going to deal with. We are going to do the first one as per the agenda, and after we'll do the main one, the main appropriation bill. So with your indulgence, so that we don't allow the department to go out and in, I'm going to request we do the first one, and then after the questions, the resolutions will do both of them after both the appropriation bills. Do we agree on that? Okay. Thank you very much. So I'm going to hand over HOD. We start with the adjustment amount for the additional adjustment appropriation bill B4 of 2019. I don't know, Minister first and then HOD.
Let me hand over to HOD right away.
Okay, thank you very much.
I just want to say that members, that we actually received an additional allocation from National. And I would like our CFO to take us through why we received it, how we are going to spend it, and all the details. And we'll take it to you and give it in a nutshell.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honourable members, we had two big fires in Skayelitsha and in the Philippi, Silvertown in Kosovo there in Philippi. And although it's only 342 shacks that burned down, we said that we cannot do the same thing all the time. So we approached the National Department of Human Settlement for to apply for funding out of the disaster grant. It's a Section 7 grant, and it is for provinces. We want to do something more permanent that we can utilize in cases where there's fires come down, and that not only issues in fire kits again. So they approved that our application, and that's why they gave us the 83 million rand. We're going out on tender already, although it's only today and being appropriated. We're going out on tender on Friday. It's already on the government tender bulletin last Friday, and over the weekend, those tenders will be advertised in some of the major newspapers. We're going out for 1,350 emergency housing units. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Members, from the, you have the thin blue book of additional adjusted estimate is from page 1 up to page 5. Is there any questions from this? For the vote 8. Member David? Are we only doing page 1 to 5?
Yeah, 1 until 5 is the vote 8.
Vote 8, yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. I welcome the amount that we receive from the National Department. But my question is, as I heard the person speaking here, did you only apply for Khayelitsha in Philippi? What about the other areas where there was also fire, like Oudtshoorn? There was a big fire in Oudtshoorn and all of it, Vapartaal and all of it. That's my first question. My second question is, how are they going to break down this money for Philippi and Khayelitsha? And are you going to use the same land where the fire happened? Like if my shack burned down now on this land, are you going to use that same land, or is it going to be totally on another piece of land? That's my third question. And then my fourth question is, Chairperson, on this, let me sit down, let me just get my fourth question here. And then also, are we going to work from a waiting list, or are we just going to your house burn down, your shack burn down? We are giving money, allocating money to you, or house to you. Thank you.
Okay. I'm going to hand over to CFO.
Thanks, ma'am. The issue is why Khayelitsha and Mitchell's Plain? Yes, Khayelitsha and Philippi. Yes, it's Khayelitsha and Philippi, because that's at the time that we did the application, it was for those fires. However, we also had another fire that we have experienced, which was in Wuppertal, that we actually just did the application. We are still awaiting the outcome for that. However, the work is progressing. We have taken the risk to bite the bullet and continue with the work at Wuppertal while awaiting the funding. It's not finalized yet, but we anticipate that it will be approved. We are moving on that one. Will the people be moved to the same piece of land? The answer is no. We have identified certain parcels in Khayelitsha, on a parcel in close proximity to where the fire actually took place, which was actually owned by the city, and we have negotiated with the city for us to build these TRAs that we are actually scheduling for them to become PRAs, so that we use it as transit homes in times of crisis. And then when it comes to the, or that is for the Khayelitsha, and in for the Kosovo part, we bought a parcel of land on the wedge. We have identified a parcel there on the wedge where we will be able, of the portion that we have bought, where we can actually build TRAs that can be considered as PRAs, which are elegant, decent, dignified, and we will build those units there, and we will move the people who are actually the victims of fire or people who are congested to move in there to prevent another future fire from happening while we are building for the people of those areas permanent houses in Kosovo. So that's what actually is we are intending to do. Waiting list. Are we going to be looking at people on the waiting list? We'll be looking at the victims first, the fire victims that are identified by name, by clan on the list. And in addition to that, we will also be looking at those people who are so congested that can trigger an emergency. And we'll identify those as well. They won't be owning these units. These units will never be owned by the beneficiary. It will be owned by the provincial government. It will become a provincial government stock that we can utilize for future crises that may happen, and where we can actually be able to say, when it burns, you can take somebody somewhere. Or when people are actually residing on areas with where there's too much storm, we can actually take them and actually place them there. And that's what we are going to utilize this TRS for.
Before you continue, I think if I'm going to say to Member Allen, PRA and TRA is going to ask me, what are you talking about? So if we can use the full words before the abbreviations, it will be nice.
An emergency housing is actually for temporary residential. Are you with me? But because we are a responsible organ of state, we don't like this temporary using taxpayers' money as if you are just biting it and throw it away. We are saying we want to actually take these temporary, the requirement for emergency is for temporary. However, we want to utilize that resource to build a fleet of permanent residential areas utilizing this technology that can last for longer, while the person may be temporary in the house, in that TRA, in that PRA, permanent residential area. The person may be temporal, but the structure is not temporal. The person can move out and we can bring in another person in a crisis in future. So it is the individual that moves into the unit that is temporal, but the structure is classified as a PRA, permanent residential area, but for temporal accommodation for people. So we don't always ask for money running around when there's a crisis. When we have moved those people out of those temporal, those PRAs, they will be actually leaving a stock available for the state to move somebody else in who is in crisis. Are you with me? Jalonjala, so that there will be a change of people. It will never be owned by the individual. It will remain in the ownership of the state. So the department will be still in control of that area. And that's it.
So your chair member also asked about knives and threatened that by bitter applied directly and the funds were allocated directly from national to them. Knives now withdrew because they received assistance from our Western Cape Department of Local Government.
A follow-up?
Yes, Chair, just a follow-up with all that was said. If these people now is going to stay temporarily in a permanent structure, are they firstly going to pay rent for that structure, because you are saying it still belongs to the provincial government, those structures? And then my second follow-up question is, what happened to these people when you take them out there from this permanent, but they are temporary there? What happened to them? Are they going back to a shack, or are they going into a permanent structure like a subsidy house or whatever?
Namas, is there any answer? Any question? That's all. Okay. Over to you,
HOD. What will these people pay rent? The answer is they won't pay a half a cent. Because this is, you must remember, the grant is emergency grant. It's meant for people in a crisis, in a bad condition, where a disaster has happened. So they are actually being placed there as a holding area. It's like a holding room for your future home. So what we are going to be doing, because if you look at Kosovo, in Kosovo, the land, the wedge where we are building is a piece of land, actually not a land, piece of land, is a farm that we purchase in its totality, where we are going to be building their new homes for the people of Kosovo and the broader Mitchell's Plain area. Are you with me? We will be building houses there, of which these beneficiaries who are moving into these PRAs
who qualify for housing will be drawn out of there into their permanent future home. Are you with me? That's what's going to happen. So, but they are not going to pay rent and will use this unit, these units, as a decanting space. Are you with me? You need, after we have identified your solutions for you, we take you out, we put you into your final home, so that we don't actually have this crisis of running around, and they are not going to pay not a cent of a rent, nothing.
Member Davis. Thank you, Chairperson. So what you're actually saying to us is this is a solution for the people of fire that go into big walls, where the municipality just throw all those families into one wall and all of it. It's actually good. Thank you. Thank you very much. I think that was the last question for this adjustment. Do we agree to that, members? Okay. Thank you very much. Welcome, Mephila, myself, and member Dijana. Thanks for coming. Let's continue with deliberation of vote 8, human settlements in the schedule to the Western Cape Appropriation Bill 2019. The big blue book. I'm going to first allow Minister to do the forward, and after the HOD, and we take the questions for the forward, and then we will continue with the pages of the budget. Over to you.
Well, as I said, Chair, we can just go straight to the deliberations.
HOD, you agree to that? Or any forward?
I agree.
Members, do you have questions on the forward, on the APP, or you want to start with it? Okay. Member Davis?
Thank you, Chairperson. I have a question on page 1. There the Minister is speaking about consultants, enterprises.
Where do you know?
Your forward in this book.
Oh, you're in the APP. Okay. I thought you're in the blue book.
But David, just ask question about the consultants. What's the question? You don't have...
I want to know what was the criteria used for this consultant enterprises. That's my question.
What was the criteria used for the...
What is the criteria used to employ these enterprises?
I want to know what was the criteria used to employ these consultant enterprises. And then page 2, it's also part of your forward, Minister. You are speaking about sustainable land, and only 133 acres became available. Is this equivalent to one small farm? That's my question. Can I do a clarity? We remember the department came for the budget, and then you are asking because you compared it to. So you don't have to ask with the page. Just ask the question that you have identified.
On the forward.
Yeah, that you identified, and then so that we can concentrate on the budget. Yeah. Thank you, member. Okay. If we can get the response.
Thank you, Chair. The first question as to what is the criteria used to appoint the consultants, I mean, it's the normal process that we follow, and I think the most relevant person to answer this, because I don't get involved in the appointment of the consultants, even though it is outlined in my forward, is the accounting officer. And I think the accounting officer will deal with that, because I don't want to give the impression here that I get involved in the appointment of the consultants. But on the second part of the question, you are asking whether this is a farm. You're talking about the 133 hectares. Well, for your information, Member Davis, and maybe just to give you an idea, that I mean, a hectare is a 2 rugby fields. That should give you an idea when we talk about. But. Obviously, when you talk about 133 hectares, it might seem like a very big piece of land. But if you take into cognizance the rate of the population growth, vis-a-vis the demand, you need to make sure that you use that piece of land wisely, taking into cognizance the future population growth vis-a-vis the current one. So it is quite pleasing, yes, that if you look at the land banking that has been done, we really have, you know, substantial, you know, pieces of land, but how we use it going forward is going to be very, very important.
The first question on how were the consultants appointed. Our department, when it actually do business, it actually do it in a very orderly manner, in full compliance to supply chain management prescripts and in full adherence to the PFMA. Now, let's now go straight to how consultants are actually doing work for the department. What we did for the entire built sector and the real estate industry, we went out on a call for tenders for all service providers in the built sector profession or real estate who'd have loved to do business with the department to be on the provincial Department of Human Settlements framework. Are you with me? And we asked them, if they are interested, can you come? If you're an architect, an engineer, quant surveyor, a town planner, if you are interested, come. And we have adjudicated those companies to look whether are they actually competent to do the work, are they having the capacity to do the work, have they tried and tested, are they certified by their professional bodies to do such type of work that they claim they want to do. And then after that, we have placed them on a framework. And then when you are placed on the framework, it's not a guarantee for a job. It's you are just there, but that you are, can be utilized. And then where work opportunities came, we could derive them from that framework to make sure that those enterprises are getting an equitable, fair share of the work opportunities in the department. That's how we actually appoint professional service providers. And we do that in full compliance to supply chain management prescripts.
Thank you very much. Members, we are going to take page 365 to page 370. Any questions from those pages? When you ask questions, just say the page, please. Member Dijana.
Thank you, Chairperson. My apologies, I'm late. Page 369, the informal settlement support plan. It says 369. It says that the department is saying that they have appointed 8 NGOs who will serve as intermediaries in communities and support the department and municipalities to plan. Now my question is, these 8 NGOs, are they going to cater for all the municipalities in the province, or is each and every municipality going to appoint each and every NGO for themselves, or what? I just need clarity on this NGO thing. Thank you.
Members, we are going to, you can ask questions up to 3 each, and then we'll take it from there, and then you'll get another clarity in between if there's a, maybe you hear that the answer in the question is not what you have asked. So is there any member that has another question? Or member Dijana, you still have another question on those pages?
Actually, it's not a question on page 370. The partnership strategy and the catalytic and provincial priority projects. I just want to welcome those initiatives, thinking that they will be monitored for implementation. Because I've checked and then I saw the partnership strategy and also the priority projects. Thank you.
Okay. Members, is there any other questions for those pages? No questions. Over to you, HOD.
I just want to hand over to Rika. She will be able to answer the first question.
Thank you, Chairperson. The process that the HOD has explained, we advertise also for NGOs to register on a database. We assess them, and 8 of them was found to be responsive to what we needed. We then link these NGOs to specific municipalities. So we now know that organization A is linked to, say, for example, Bito, Knysna, and George. I'm just making an example. So that's how they work. So they're allocated or linked to a specific municipality and they do the work there. But they don't just go in to do the work. Jointly with the department, the municipality and the NGO and the communities, we decide what is the nature of intervention that we need. And based on that, they then give us, we draft the scope of work, and that scope of work gets assessed, and we issue them then an appointment letter based on a process that we've been through to assess whether we agree with the costing and the work that they are doing. But I must also say we have beforehand agreed on the rates that we will pay for this work. So it's not as if it's just that they can make up any numbers. So it's agreed to numbers. But the nature of the work differs from area to area and from settlement to settlement. That's why we do a scope of work per settlement. And the main objective is actually to do participatory planning and to fast track then our planning processes that we can do the upgrading.
Okay. Member Davis?
Thank you, Chair. I will go to page 375. If you earmark allocation.
We were still up to 370. So if you are saying 375, I'm going to say it's fine. Can we go up to page... there's still a hand before. 371. Okay, so let's take it from 370 to 390. Okay. Member Simmons and after Member Davis.
Chair, just have one question. It emanates from 370, the catalytic and provincial projects, up to 371, where they list the various provincial priority projects. And I've gone through the budget. I just have one question. These opportunities, and the minister a few meetings back raised concern about the backyard dwellers. My question now is, I've just calculated, just on 371, the 13 projects, it's around about 55,000 housing opportunities, but how many of those opportunities are people in the backyards? Because, you know, I'll make a practical example. In Oudtshoorng, I recently visited two individuals. The one is a lady of 72 who's been on the waiting list for 26 years. A daughter who's got cancer has been on the waiting list for 18 years. They are backyarders. Yet, we have the beautiful project of Rose Valley there in Oudtshoorng. We've handed out title deeds, but these people are still on the waiting list. And I'm afraid this old lady is going to die, and if the daughter doesn't die before the mother, it's a scenario, but they're still on the waiting list. And but look at all these housing opportunities, even in the metro area itself. You can go into any area, you will see this backyard is becoming a massive issue. So how many of these opportunities will go to the backyard? It's becoming a massive problem across our entire province. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Member Davis?
So I can move to 375 now, Chair.
Yeah. Okay, 375, Chairperson. The sub-program 3.1, Administration Job Creation EPWP, the amount there. I want to know how is this going to be implemented, because currently when you look to the municipalities with the EPWP, I don't see them using it for housing opportunities or people that is working in the housing department or whatever. Or is the province going to implement this program? That is my question. Is this money going to the municipalities, or is the province going to handle this implementation themselves? Then I want to go to page... can I move on, Chairperson? Okay, then I want to go to page 3... Oh, no, that's 80. Okay, then I want to go to page 380, Chairperson. The sub-program there, point 2.3, planning. If we are serious about building houses and addressing what Member Summers was saying now, the backyard dwellers, why are we giving so little money to the planning? That's my question there. And then I'm going to page... Now it's past the... I'm going over to... Go on, Member.
Yeah,
the whole book. Just ask questions. Yeah, you're good to me. I want to go to housing development, Chairperson.
in page 383, my class. It's not so good, it's okay, with me. Your sub-program 3.3. What is the reason for, what is the reason for the decrease in sub-program 3.3 with your programs of administration and financial intervention? And then, my last question now, Chairperson, I'm done for the whole day. Program 4. This is also program 4. Your housing asset management, Chairperson. What is the reason for the housing properties maintenance decrease?
That's all, and then we'll do the another round if there are any questions from members.
HOD?
The question on the backyarders, now this is something that we normally grapple with. The criteria is very simple when it comes to housing allocation. It's that you must meet the criteria. You must be a South African. You must earn less than 3,500, etc. But more importantly, the principle of first come, first serve apply, Member Simas. Now, whether you are a backyard or informal settlements dwellers, that's the principle that we normally use. That if you registered for a house 20 years ago, you must get it before someone who registered 5 years ago. But then again, we have a number of programs within the housing code under which developments are done. Now, you have a situation, because you have your brownfields and your greenfields, Member Simas. Now, in a brownfield, you embark on what is known as UISP or upgrading of informal settlements, where you end up just looking at the criteria and not necessarily, the waiting list. But in all our greenfield projects, waiting list is a prerequisite, which means before you get a house, you must have been waiting on the housing demand database for some time. But there is a gap here, Member Simas, which is a big issue that I'm now addressing. I had a meeting this morning with people from Highbury. There are a number of people who are claiming that they've been waiting for years. And I think part of the problem here is that those people who've been waiting for years, you find that their names might be on the waiting list, but when it's time for you to contact them, because of the fact that they've registered for so many years, their details have changed so many times, it becomes a challenge that their information on the housing demand database is outdated, and therefore you can't track them. That's the first thing. Now, how do we then bridge that gap? Because it's a reality that we face. But and for some reason, some of the people do not appear on the waiting list, even though they are backyarders who've been waiting for years. Now, part of what I'm proposing to bridge that gap is that we work with various structures, whether a local authority or community organizations, where we are saying we've got to find a way of bringing those people into the project by inviting, because we are saying to organizations, please provide us with the list of those people who are saying, well, I've been waiting for years, but for some reason that person is not on the waiting list, or he or she is not contactable. Then we are able to cross-reference those names with the housing demand database. And I always make it very clear, Member Simas, that there are rules, but also there are exceptions. Now, if Mrs. Davis is 70 years old, and for some reason does not appear on the housing demand database, but is known that he's been living in Pal East all her life, you can't then overlook her and give a house to a 23-year-old just because that 23-year-old is on the housing demand database. We are saying that is where you apply exception. Because we must not then always think that the reason why people are not on the waiting list is their fault, because we must also take some responsibility. So we are saying in that situation, let the organizations that are working with those people. If you are saying there are people who are, do not appear on the list or who are, are not contactable, but who live in your communities, when there's a project, we say bring those people on board. Member Philander will remember that we did the same intervention in Dromedaris project, where a number of people from PAL East, for example, Member Davids, were not going to benefit in that project if we didn't do that. Because there is a gap, and we must accept it, that there is a gap between the people who need houses, in fact, the most deserving people, and what appear on our own demand, you know, database. And we must then try to close that gap all the time. Because it is a reality that we are faced with, that there are people who are saying, I registered for us 30 years ago, but I'm still waiting. Now, we always emphasize this point that people who are working with us, whether it's municipalities or organizations that are working with us in these areas where we are developing, please, we do allow a situation where the names are included in the project, and we make exceptions to the rules under those circumstances.
Just a follow-up. Thank you, Minister. Minister, you didn't ask that question. Thank you for the answer. I know in Oudtshoorn Municipality, because for me the problem isn't with the department, it was here in Cape Town. And I actually tested how the system works. Remember, you go in, you apply, you get a card, there's a number, and you have to go every year, blah, blah, blah. Now, this woman goes every year. They need to take the doctor's letter saying that they're chronic and all this. I mean, I actually saw the file. But yet, with this Rose Valley Housing Project, with all the beneficiaries that have gotten houses, she has done what the system requires of her. So I believe that there's a problem with the local human settlements office in Oudtshoorn. And just to expand on why I'm saying this, because it's not at this level. In Kannaland, and I informed the chairperson of this, you have a beneficiary who is approved. The names get through, sent through to you, head of us here in Cape Town. Then, for some other reason, the municipality suddenly changes the beneficiary list and removes this individual. Now, this individual is still a backyard in Kannaland, and somebody else got their house because, for some other reason, the municipality, once again, it comes back to the municipality, they just remove this individual's name. And I'm trying to comprehend, you know, isn't there another way that one can do the allocation of beneficiaries? Because one needs to be honest, is if you listen to when there's community uprisings and it's about human settlements, it's never what this department does, it's always what's happening at local government level. And it's very concerning because the department has got good intentions and they are very transparent, but when it comes down to filtering it down to local government level, and one needs to call it what it's supposed to be called, there is housing list manipulation happening. And my concern is, I'm going to use these two individuals as another example. We have now again, I've assisted her myself. I went with her to the doctor. She got another letter saying that she's chronic and that her mother is chronic. Once again, to submit all of this to the Oudtshoorn office. I won't keep my breath because I can already see the outcome for this woman, what's going to happen. And people are losing hope because 20-year-olds, 21-year-olds are getting houses. But people that are really needing the houses, that have been living in backyards for so long, because of a system that's been implemented at local government level, it's being manipulated. And when you confront these individuals, they will tell you, no, but we send the list to province. Then they give you the blame, it's not your mistake. I'm just trying to highlight this.
Thank you very much, Members. I know, Members, you know, housing is a very emotional, and you sort of are going to be hooked up in trying to find answers. And I know the department will try by all means to give us the answers. But I'm going to say, when we finish here, meet with Pillars to make sure you give that information so I can deal with that. And but we'll give the minister will give the answers after. Member, are you going to do the clarity on that question?
Follow up
on the same question.
Yeah.
Because other questions have been answered?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
No. They must still answer my question.
Yeah, they still have to answer the question. That is what I'm asking. They follow up on the same?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Speak on the plagiat as well as chairperson, because you see these two sides of a coin. A lot of plagiat as well as where my constituency is. I can tell you, chairperson, they did have houses. They sold those houses. Now they went back. And now they still want to have houses before the people in the informal settlements that qualify for that house. So there's always two sides to a coin. You must really investigate, really. That of the member summons, because he assisted the people. That is true. He knows what is happening. But there's also other situations where these backyard dwellers, majority of them, they did have houses. And they sold it.
But you see, Chair, because you know, Member Simas is raising a very important issue. That is why we always emphasize the point on roles and responsibilities of different spheres of government. We do not dictate to municipalities which areas to prioritize when they plan for development. The biggest problem that we have at municipal level is that their project identification is not informed by things that should inform it. And, well, talking about Oteron, because fortunately I have experience with Oteron, the biggest problem in Oteron is that they've always prioritized UISP, which is a problem, instead of prioritizing people who are on the waiting list. Now, there is a project that is currently being planned by Oteron Municipality. Also, there are issues with that project, you might be aware, Member Simas. That project will start to prioritize people. I mean, I'm told that there are people who are on the waiting list since 1960s. Because this is the problem, members, because it is the responsibility of the municipality to say, okay, which areas in our municipalities are oldest in the waiting list? Then which means when we put a business plan together to submit it to province, we must identify those areas and then prioritize them. Remember, every time our intervention starts when we have to assess whether the project meets the requirements and then fund it. Because the planning happened at municipal level. So that's where the problem is. What we need to address is really the correct prioritization at a municipal level. Because the municipality must say, okay, in our areas, this is an area that deserves to be prioritized, and therefore our business plan will prioritize these people and then we'll send it to the province. That is what we need to get right. And I must say that also on failed to get that right for a very long time. The prioritization has always been on the UISP, which means these are informal settlements, people who are already there. You go there and upgrade those informal settlements up to a point where you build them houses. In the meantime, you just neglect your backyarders who've been waiting for years. And that is what we are trying to address now, because we are now insisting. While we know that planning is a responsibility of municipality, but we are now insisting to say that municipalities must prioritize the right people when it comes to how they plan their projects.
HRD, we can continue with the other questions.
Thank you. There was a question posed with regard, will the EPWP budget be spent by the department or distributed to municipalities? The answer is the latter. We, as the provincial department, will be using that entire EPWP budget as it read, and we are not going to transfer it to municipalities. We are on an operation for others on that one. Reason is it's too little in comparison to the total budget that we have, and we are using it currently for looking after our TRAs, maintaining it, etc., and that's what we are going to continue to use it. We may actually try to enhance the way we utilize it, but it's not going to be transferred. It's too little in comparison to the total figures that we actually have. There was also a question that was posed, why are we giving so little to program to planning? The answer is on a year by year basis, the allocation that we're giving to planning is increasing. And however, don't do the comparison of planning in relation to other directorates, because planning is doing the non-infrastructure delivery. It's doing the planning, the engagements, the services. So they are fully resourced in terms of the financial resources required to do the work that they need to do and policy. However, the hardcore budget absorbers are usually in infrastructure. So the infrastructure absorbers are actually lying in another program. But when there is a need for extra funding for planning activities, it is allocated there. But there is no shortage of financial resources for planning, because there's more of intellectual resources that are utilized. There's too much of engagements with communities and industry, and that amount that is allocated there is adequate for them to actually carry on with the planning and the long-term planning initiatives. And when the need arises, additional allocations are actually allocated. It's not where you do the infrastructure expenditure, hence that figure is that much. There are departments in this province that actually who their entire budget is that budget, is that allocation that planning actually has. Then there was a question on why the decrease on program 3. Franz, okay, can you actually answer on that one?
Chairperson, thank you. The whole of the grant is being administered in program 3. So if these professionals that's been appointed to assist with planning is also coming under 3.2 mm-hmm. financial interventions. That financial interventions has also now been benefited with this 83 million that we give. So that is why there's a big decrease this year. We don't know about any further funding that we might get for disasters at this moment in time. Also under that program, we fund the FLIST, the individuals, and the OPSCAP. Now, if you, the provincial treasury, via the structures in provincial government, gave us an additional amount of 15 million rand for salaries that we usually took from OPSCAP. So we took actually subsidy money, operational capital. So that we allocated that straight back to subsidies. So we are funding less people from our subsidy money. That's the reason for the big decrease in that program. The decrease on maintenance in program 4 is that we are phasing out the Western Cape Housing Development Fund, less and less properties to be maintained, and one of these days there will be nothing to be spent on maintenance. Thank you.
Member David has got a follow-up.
Yes, definitely Chairperson, I think Rika, you are responsible for planning. I think she will differ with you, actually. Because I know...
You're the chief of planning.
Oh, you are the chief of planning. Because planning is... human settlement is not only about infrastructure to me. It's about how you plan for the infrastructure. And how you put your frameworks and your policies and all of those together. Because if we look to the Human Settlement Department in a home, you will see that planning for me will play a major role as a person staying in a town. I want to know that that department is funded to do the integrated process that we need to do, and also to take us out of the apartheid spatial planning. So for me, that department need to be well funded. Right? Okay. And then I want to come to the last speaker on program 4, the FLIP. That's why I was asking that question, because of the FLIP. Because if Minister always speaks, he said that is a program that he wants to take forward to make sure that there is enough houses for our people. So how is that decrease going to influence that?
I just want to deal with the FLIS. The FLIS are not being dealt with, the honourable member. That's the old pre-94 stuff.
Yes,
so we're phasing that out. The FLIS PLUS is a subsidy program whereby we allocate a subsidy to people earning between 3.5 and 22,000 now. We're also building our own units that we are selling, but that will only be inventory. This is the old business. Okay, so we're phasing that out and we're moving on towards a new, to the new programs that we need to do.
We are phasing out all our old assets, houses and stuff that, that in what built in the apartheid days, if I understand you correctly. But then I want to ask you a question. I think member Wendy will Graby Street, does it ring a bell? Graby Street and Pinarstraat and Drakenstein, does it ring a bell? Are those part of those
socialized?
Oh, is that
social
housing?
Oh, that's
CRUs. Yeah, municipal stock. Okay, you see? They are saying it belongs to provincial housing. He's saying it's municipal stock. It's not municipal stock, because you can ask member Philander, that is a problem. Do you know that some of these houses, those houses, the toilets and everything almost collapsed already? That is an unsafe area, actually. And in that houses, it's majority of old people saying that some of those children are sleeping in cars that stays at that houses. So really, we must clarify now, does it belong to province or does it belong to Drakenstein municipality? Okay. And it's all, and is it part of this program that...
Okay, can I deal with the different programs here? And including the question that you've just asked now. What Francois was referring to are old debtors of this department. Yes. Of pre-1994. Now, these are the people who have been paying all this time. But some of them can no longer afford to pay because they are either old or they're not working. What we've done is to reward these people, because right now we are building free houses by making subsidy available so that they can pay off their debt. That's the difference. But then you have different programs. You have your CRUs, you have your social housing. I mean, you can't own social housing. You have your CRUs. Now, irrespective, I mean, where it belongs to, because for me that's neither here nor there, whether it belongs to the municipality or to the province. The bottom line is that for any social housing or CRU, it's community residential units, because, I mean, I think we must get use of getting away from these acronyms, so for the benefit of any community residential unit, for that stock to be sustainable, you need people to pay. Now, the biggest challenge that we have across the province, more so in the city of Cape Town, is that if we were running a business, we would be under long time ago. We would have been liquidated. Because if you compare the maintenance cost with what people are paying, we are spending more maintaining those flats than what we are getting in return. You can't run a business like that. Because, I mean, yes, we are government, but we must... At least we must be even. I mean, we must break even if we are to maintain those. The biggest challenge is that if people are no longer paying, because there's a difference between people who cannot afford to pay and people who refuse to pay. And if you look at our rental stock, we've conducted, an exercise where we realize that there are people who can pay but refuse to pay. Now, we cannot carry the burden of those people who refuse to pay when they can pay. So, for any of rental stock, whether it's CRU or social housing, to be sustainable, we must at least break even. Otherwise, we can't justify having a situation where we're spending more maintaining, but people are not paying.
Thank you very much, Member Kilana.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just a question for clarity. Did I understand the CFO through you correctly if he says that indeed of the rental stock will be disposed of, people to become owners of that?
Chairperson, we are keeping out a few rental properties in the APP. It's also listed as the Runa, the Wild Drive at this moment in time, Sundrift, but we will transfer or employ the social housing institutions to run it on our behalf. We might be doing something additional with Sundrift, whereby we might, it's all loose-standing, small little houses, maybe, don't want to say it, but maybe demolish it and build big stock. It's right in the middle of Century City. So while we are doing our plans and getting funding available, we might do that. But we are the ones that the people are in the single houses at this moment in time. They are getting their houses through our process of writing off those debt. We are also thinking of sexualizing Gateville. That's a other process. That is also rental stock. It's 102 units, 132 units that we want to transfer to the people that's living there.
Thank you very much.
Ma'am, myself? Just to add on what Francois is saying, the rental stock that's in a municipal area is from 3 years or so, 4 years or so ago, we had written to the municipalities to take those properties over. Some of them, at that time, indicated they were not interested, but they've subsequently turned around and they've written to us saying they would want to accept that, and that does include Drakenstein, Stellenbosch, and so I just wanted to say within the municipal areas of jurisdictions, we will be letting go of that stock and we've written to the municipalities.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yes, Chair, do I understand correctly if you say the municipality takes ownership of that stock, maintaining it, and not necessarily carrying it over to those occupying it?
So through your chair, so they've got an option of keeping it as it's their decision. So the council will have to take a decision to either transfer it to the individual beneficiaries or retain it as rental stock and manage it as such. Yeah.
Member Davis? Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to echo what the department is saying, because I was one of the people that wrote a letter on behalf of the people in Pinastri, an old man, and the problem is Drakenstein municipality. They didn't want to take responsibility for those houses and also for the people in those houses. But I want to pose a question now to the department. Is the department still busy with that, or are you leaving it to Drakenstein as well?
We would obviously like to reach some finality on the matter, and we would be engaging with the municipality in that regard, because we have even started the process of subdivision, because you'd remember in Pinastri there's some backyarders. We even suggested that let's subdivide so that we even give the backyarders the properties. So we will be taking that up again with the municipality, because we would like to reach some finality on the matter to ultimately transfer that. We've even costed it insofar as making sure that the electrical works and everything conforms to NHBRC and the toilets. So we're just literally waiting for the council to make a decision on that matter. But we will follow it up with them, members.
Thanks. Thank you very much, members. I said from the first page to the last page, do you still have questions? I believe you don't have any questions. Thank you very much. I'm going to request the members, because we are almost at the end of the 5th Parliament, going to the 6th Parliament. So there might be new members here and new faces, the other side maybe, I don't know. So I'm going to request... And like Member David says, HOD is going to meet Member Davis. So we are going to start with Member Davis to say how much is HOD going to miss her, and then we'll go all members to talk. Others, we've been here for the whole 4.5 years, and 4.5 years, and then the others just joined us. So let me give it to the members to talk to the department. Member Davis.
No. I've learned a lot, because I was first in the economic and the agricultural portfolio, and then they served me 2 years ago to this portfolio. And I can say today, I didn't know anything about human settlement. What I know is what about local government, and what happened in local government about human settlement. But I was, my portfolio when I was in local government was the rural development and infrastructure. So I didn't have a clue. But really, you have inspired me. Especially the I love to come to this committee because just to ask questions to the HLD and then it will be like and then I will go home to the HLD with a laugh.
Yeah, thank you.
So and I want to leave a word with you guys that I don't know who's going to govern. Only God knows after the 8th of May. But whoever is going to govern, the department must keep up what you're doing. And don't change. Be the same people that you are. Because politics must not change us. We are first human beings before we become politicians. So, and I want to bless you for the new year. And that you must go from grace to grace. And from what you are currently doing good to better. Thanks.
Thank you, Member. Member Dijan?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I would just like to say thank you to you. Thank you, Chairperson.
Sorry, Chairperson. Yeah, thank you, Sharon, for you. Chairperson, thank you. We went to Rwanda together. I've learned there who you are. And thank you for being my Chairperson.
Hey, Sharon. Thank you. Chairperson, firstly, I want to say thank you to you. And then secondly, I would say thank you to Ubuti. I'm calling him Ubuti. I'm not saying minister or whatever. Thank you, Putuam. And then this is HOD. HOD. I want to say thank you to everyone in department. Ne? Thank you for everything which you have done to us. We've learned a lot. I've learned a lot, in fact, as truth. But I will just ask you that those who are coming, because there are new members who are coming, some of them, they will not know nothing. Some of them, they will know what is happening. But I think, as member David is saying, that you must be the same people as you are now, treating us the way you are treating us, and then you must also assist those who are coming. I also like to say thank you very much to Upil. Because Upila, I liked the way she was answering. She's always answering and whatever. Love you, Basis. Thank you for everything. The way you are answering questions when we questioned here. I liked the fact that she was always open and whatever, transparent and whatever. But I like in this department, I will say thank you to you. As Gengoku Sharon was saying that, more grace, more power, everything, more to you, HOD. Take this department highly. As it is now, it's in the middle, but now you must take it high. But by the great grace of God, it will happen like that. I thank you very much.
Thank you.
As the newest member...
I'm going to chop it in again because it's my last day. I want to say, like Steve was saying, I want to say to Jackie, keep up the good work.
On behalf of Member David, all of you, keep up the good work.
It is amazing to understand that if I peruse the APP in seeing the demand, and it was close to 600K, and the 50K opportunities now, knowing that we probably need about 50 billion rand, which is a lot of money, but the success that you have already reached in order to see how you can help and assist, which is amazing. I'm not sure how you do it. I wish I was here longer in order to find out. But I wish you all of the best to the minister, all of the best to you, sir, and the HOD and everyone. Thank you for having me here. And to the chairperson, even the coordinator and all my colleagues on this side. It appears based on the speech that we will miss someone here after the election, but thank you.
Thank you, Member Philander.
Thank you, Chair. Very sweet and short.
please keep on serving our communities with distinction. I think this is the department with one of the most challenging ones, but one you can always see that serves with that, how can you say it, a very humble approach towards our communities. So yes, thank you very much and all the best to all of you.
Member Simas?
Chair, no, thank you. Chair, I think from my side, you know, it's been, before I thank the minister and I thank everybody, for me the Department of Human Settlements and the leadership of Minister Madikizela for the last 10 years, you know, they've done really exceptional. Now, I've been a counselor for 6 years of this 10, so I've experienced the joy that people at the end of everything is discussed here. I've seen it. I've seen people cry when they receive their title deeds. I've even seen people die with true dignity after receiving their houses. When I became a member of parliament, because now I represent constituents, and I still see, you know, everybody starts with dignity. And under the leadership of Minister Madikizela, the thousands of lives that he and his department has changed. So many people, and if you widen it out, the broader family they belong to, the dignity that this department has restored, given the finite resources they have at their disposal. Ultimately, if anybody is to ask me as a member of the Standing Committee, what will I remember Minister Madikizela as being Minister of Human Settlements in his department, is restoring the dignity of the people. Because I've seen the end user and I've now performed the oversight over the department. And ultimately, it's still a long way to go nationally, but what this province under this minister has proven, that if you work smartly with finite resources, you can really restore people's life and restore dignity for many of our people who've waited so long for change. So I want to thank the minister on behalf of an entire region that I represent as well, because dignity really goes a long way to many people. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think it's my turn now. I just want to first start by thanking our coordinator, Shimis. She's been here for 5 years with us, and I believe she's been more than 5 years there. After Minister Madikizela, Shimis in this department to in saving the portfolio. But I just want to say to Minister, I think it's going to be difficult if you can leave Human Settlements to detach of saying the Department of Minister Madikizela, because Human Settlements and Madikizela, they go together. There's no way you can separate them. So whoever might come after you is going to have it difficult. It will be called Minister Madikizela, even if it's not Madikizela. But the changes that you are making within the communities, this department is one that people say thanks the day that you give them the keys from there. There's no thank you. It's a fight throughout. It's one department that it's appreciated and unappreciated at the same time. But it's more unappreciated of the strides that you are making within the communities out there. The footprints that you are leaving as a department, it's really appreciated from us being public reps, and more appreciated for those ones that really know what does it entail for them to eventually being the end user of what you are bringing to them. And I'm not going to say thank you to Minister Madikizela only because we've got our HOD that we love very much. You know, HOD, always when we say we come to the standing committee, we just hear him just going on with a flair language that we get all the time. There's always something new. That today it was the Operation Fat Alice. So every day there is a word that you will bring and just say boom on us. But doing that, it was more of us learning a lot and understanding of where you come from, and that passion that you are doing your job with really rubs off on us. That is why I think from the members, they will always ask more questions about some of the finer details that we don't find in here. But we know eventually if we talk to you, we are going to attend to them. So that's the department's how you have been interacting with us, being the longest serving member with Member Dijana and Shimis.
in here. I think we are the longest serving members in this portfolio. So we can proudly say that we have seen that from the day one, even now, that energy, you still have it with you. So we wish each and every one of you really to go from strength to strength, CFO, Pilar, Jackie, and everybody that is in the offices, that is your support staff there, say to them, thank you very much, and we salute each and every one, from the one who's answering the phone to the one who's saying welcome to us when we enter that building. They're really making a difference in Western Cape. And Minister Madikizela, thank you very much. Now I'm going to hand over to you, Minister, and after HOD. And by the way, thanks for Pilar and CFO to say when let's have the meeting 6 o'clock in the morning and you come without really saying that, but you are not the minister. So again, thank you very much. But even if maybe I might not be here, I'm still going to call you. There's some lot of things we have to talk about. What do you mean, Minister?
Well, Chairperson, I must say that it's been a very interesting 10 years for me. But more importantly, I know that we are politicians belonging to different political parties. But what I've always appreciated about the members of the Standing Committee is that you know when you are preparing to come to this meeting, you must be prepared. But the engagement, I mean, no matter how tough questions are, but you always get a sense that these are people who are asking questions because they are genuinely concerned about the issues affecting their constituencies. They are not here to play politics. And I've always appreciated the members of the Standing Committee for keeping us on our toes, but really asking pertinent issues, not playing party politics. One of the lessons for me is that working in an environment where people like to put politics first is that I've been in a very fortunate position because I went through four ministers. I first worked with Tokyo Sekhwale, who really understood what this department is about. It's about putting people first. And then after Tokyo is when it was then Minister September for a short stint. And then it was Minister Sisulu, and then now it's Minister Mfeketo. And I must say that with all these ministers, we've always treated each other with respect, which is the same thing here. And I think I've also been fortunate because I have, you know, the most competent staff that one can hope for. I mean, being... No, I'm going to take that back.
525.
Now, you know, colleagues, seriously, this, I mean, being part of this department or working for this department, it is a thankless job. The officials that are sitting around this table are so competent that they could be anywhere they choose to. But they are here because, just like all of us, they have this passion and drive and dedication to change people's lives. They could have chosen to a softer department, you know, like DCAS, I'm sorry. But they are here because they are really passionate about the abusive environment that we are working under. And it is indeed a calling. I mean, these people who are sitting around this table are not working here. To them and to all of us, it's a calling to be part of this department. And for me, really, it has been a very fulfilling, I mean, challenging yet fulfilling experience, having been part of this department. And you are right, Chair, that it's very difficult to let go. As abusive as the environment is, but it's very difficult to let go because, as Member Sima said, you can actually feel the difference that you are making, even though there are many challenges. But when you make a difference to one person, it touches you. you go home feeling a different, I'm like a different person. So I want to thank each and every one of you, members, and I want to wish you all the best. And I have no doubt in my mind that all of you, God has a special place for you after this fifth term of parliament, because you are true South Africans who really, really have passion for your people as politicians and as officials. So all the best for the sixth term of parliament. Thank you.
Chairperson, in terms of protocol, an accounting officer, where I come from, is not usually allowed to speak after his political principal. But I will make that career-limiting statement now, because towards the end of term of government, it doesn't do any damage. I just want to thank the standing committee for all the support that they've given to human settlements. Chairperson, what you did with your team is actually, you actually enhanced us, enabled us to enhance the program of action that we implemented here. The critiques that we received from you, maybe you have forgotten about it, the criticisms, when we back in the office, we were saying, did you hear what the chairperson said? Did you hear what that member said? How do we actually look into this? We may appear sometimes to be defensive, but you do plant a seed through the comments you made, which enable us to actually try to do better. So if we have succeeded, you have succeeded. Because the intention here is to actually just do the best for the communities that we actually claim we serve. I want to thank this committee for all the support. I want to thank you for actually asking us the difficult questions. And yes, I'm just only want to say I'm wishing you the utmost best for the future. May you continue serve God's people in whatever role you are taking in the following years to come. And God's.
Okay, thank you very much. This is our last interaction, so I don't want to have a wasteful expenditure. Minister, there is tea just outside, and there is some snacks, Member David, when you get out of there. And the coffee is there. Everything. So make sure that. You know,
Blue Mountain.
Minister, you cater for the poorest of the poor. I'm not going to mention the coffee, but you really cater for the poorest of the poor. So we save every cent for the sake of you. So there's a coffee outside. Thank you very much. Members, can we sit?
Yeah.
Okay, we are going to start with the... Pardon? Yeah, we are going to start with the adjustment.
Yes.
Additional adjustment. So... But can I ask, do we want to do the resolutions while we are doing it?
No.